Last night, I was kind of putting this together and doing my last practice run, and I got done, and I just flipped on YouTube just to kill a little bit of time and just kind of relax. And this ad came on from a coffee company, and it was so funny. There was these two little girls, about 6 and 8, you know, just the typical sweet little girls. Only thing, one of them's loading a mortar, the other one's punching in coordinates. They step back, you know, the whole military drill, poof, goes off. Next scene, flash forward, they're making coffee in the kitchen, and they bring this cup of coffee into the to their dad, who's still in bed, tap him, wake him up, and Daddy, we made you coffee. And he says, oh, you girls are just the best. And all of a sudden, Mom sits up, hey, wait a minute, I didn't get coffee from you guys on Mother's Day. And one girl says, yeah, but we didn't accidentally blow up your car. You know what? As family life, isn't that a good picture of how things go? Because despite our best intentions, things happen that we don't plan for, things go wrong. I mean, we're all broken people put into close relationship with each other, and we get on each other's nerves, we grind on each other because God seems to put different personalities into the personality. I mean, into the family, we have 5 kids, and each one of them are so different. And there's hard times and stresses that come. And besides that, we also have an enemy that actively seeks to break us down, to throw sand in the gears and to make things go wrong. And my own family history, looking back into my family, my grandparents' family, had some really hard times going. Their two oldest children they adopted. The oldest one was named Irene. And I don't know a lot about what went on in my grandparents' family, but when Irene got to be 18 years old, she ran away. And the family never heard from her again. As near as we can figure out kind of things that have trickled back to the family, I don't know through friends or what the source, but they think she ended up in Washington State, but nobody knows. You know, and I can only imagine what that put my grandparents through. And in the next generation, the relationship between my dad and I was a real mixed bag. I grew up on a farm near Winger, Minnesota, and there were things that my dad did for me that were really good. You know, I started driving a tractor somewhere around 12 years old, and he just told me about, you know, you're doing the work of a full-grown man, and boy, you know, as a young guy becoming a man, that really helped me. We hunted and fished together, but there was also a part of the relationship that was missing. You know, I don't ever remember really having a heart-to-heart talk with my dad until he was on his deathbed, and then all he said was, I love you, which, you know, for some guys in his generation, that was really good. But there was also a dark side in, you know, looking back. I don't think Dad ever meant to hurt any one of us, but each one of us in his immediate family, he hurt rather deeply on an emotional level. Just an example. 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, I borrowed Dad's pickup to go fishing to a local lake about 10, 12 miles away. And on the way back, the pickup broke down, and it, you know, rural Winger, there's not a lot of people. I'm sitting there on the road. This is the days before cell phones, and it broke down right in front of a guy's house that my dad didn't like. And so, you know, what do you do? And I'm sitting there, and I'm nervous, and eventually the guy comes out, and he's nice, and he says, do you want to use the phone to call your dad? And I was like, well, yeah. So following that, Dad got mad and he grounded me. And that grounding lasted for 6 months. And, you know, he would never really say what was really going on. Eventually, we found out probably a year or two down the road that Dad was worried and nervous that as, you know, an 18, 19-year-old guy, that I was going to go out, get plastered, run into somebody, and he'd get sued and lose his farm. And on one hand, you know, it was really disappointing because in some ways my dad knew me well, and in other ways he didn't have a clue who I was. Because, you know, I'm almost a teetotaler. I think I've had probably 5 glasses of wine in my entire life, and most of that's been sitting down to dinner and somebody puts one in front of me, and, you know, I drank it, not to be rude. And going on in my own, you know, raising my own family with Elise and I, in many ways it's been a very positive experience. I had a lot of fun. It's been a really fun adventure. And yet I have to confess that there are some parts of my own brokenness and just things that I didn't know how to handle that made that rougher. Our middle daughter, Krista, and I, through the years that she was in our house, we struggled to connect. I mean, it wasn't animosity. It was just, when we tried to talk, it just seemed to miss. And it's only been within probably the last 3-4 years that we really connected and developed a deep friendship between the two of us. And one of my other daughters, as she got close to the time of her leaving, went through some deep struggles of her own. And as Elise and I were working through that with her, we ended up going to some classes with other parents that were going through some tough things as well. And in the process of that, it came out that one of the things that my daughter was dealing with was the fact that I had some times where I didn't handle my anger very well. At times, like example would be when we're getting ready to go camping, you know, and you know how it goes. I mean, as dads, we sit everybody down. Okay, the plan is everything's going to be loaded. We're going to be on the road no later than 10:30 tomorrow morning. Well, then it gets to be noon. It gets to be 1. It gets to be 3. And all of a sudden, inside, man, the pot's boiling. I'm trying to keep the lid on it. But then something happens. I mean, we've got multiple dogs and, you know, how animals are, you can't control. I'm trying to make you understand, folks, but really it's a sin issue in my heart. And, you know, the words would start coming out, and all of a sudden what turned out, what everybody was looking forward to, now we've got that awkward, silent trip till we get to the campground, all because Dad had a meltdown. You know, and as we're sitting in these classes, and realizing, you know, this has been an issue in my life for a number of years. And even though I wanted God, I want to follow God, I want to do what's right, in this area I was failing. It was sin, I was failing, and it was hurting my daughter. And even though there wasn't anger directly directed at her, it still hurt her. You know, and as we sat there in that class, after things had kind of came to a head, and you know, as parents, each of our kids has their own lives to live. And I wasn't responsible necessarily for everything that my daughter was going through, but my actions did make it tougher for her to deal with the challenges that she was facing. And as I sat there in that class, boy, I just felt like a failure as a parent. I felt like, man, I have blown it. You know, I wanted to be a dad who followed God. I wanted to never go through some of the hard times that my dad put our family through. And I just sat there and I started questioning, man, you know, and sometimes, I mean, never heard audible voices, but I just feel like Satan was saying to me, you call yourself a Christian? What kind of a dad are you? You know, and it took a long time to work through those things, and yet God was also speaking to me through that experience and just helping me to understand that as Christians, we never get to the point where we have arrived spiritually. We're always... And I kind of hate this position. We're always kind of hanging there where we are broken people And even though God expects us to grow, and I do see God working in my life, but there's never that sense where I am done with sin, I've made it, and Eric is now this solid straight line going up. It's, you know. And just God bring me to the point to realize we're okay, that isn't who I am. That's, we're all broken people. We're all sinful people that need God's help each and every day. And especially as parents, as fathers, we need that. And I'd like to share with you a few things today, just that some things I learned through the process, some things God reinforced through me going through this process, and I'd just like to share with them. The verses that I'm going to share today, I pulled these from the NIV Bible, so they may be worded slightly different than the Bibles in your pew. But if you want to follow along, I'm going to look at Micah 6:8 as our first passage. Micah 6:8 reads, "He has showed you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." You know, as fathers, our first duty is just to be an example, to show up, to walk humbly with our God. You know, humble is not thinking more of yourself than what you are, but just having an accurate view of who you are from God's point of view, from God when He looks at us. And as that plays out in our family, be real with our kids. When we goof up, when we sin, when we say something that hurts their feelings, own it, apologize, and just say, you know what, that was wrong, that was on me. Also invite them in to share your walk with God. You know, as appropriate, let them know what God has been teaching you. Talk about how God has impacted you in your life. Pray with them. Be concerned about what's going on with them in their lives and ask them to pray for you, because we need their prayers as well. Next scripture I'd like to look at is James 1:19, which reads, "My dear brother, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." You know, and quick to listen, as parents, our job is to guide or to train. And yet sometimes I think we spend a little bit too much time talking, or at least talking too quickly. The role of questions, when James tells us be quick to listen, ask your kids questions to get to know them. You know, when we do that, we're showing interest in our child. We're communicating to them that they're valuable to us, that they're important, that we want to know what's going on in their lives. Don't be in a hurry when you're doing this. Let them tell their story. Some of them take longer to get it out than others. Some have a lot more words than others. But listen to what they say. You know, and after they have said it, think about a follow-up question to get more information about what they're telling you. Things like, how did that make you feel? Were you scared? Were you excited? Tell me more about that. And as parents, you know, I'm not saying that we abdicate our role of teaching and training, but rather put the listening part first. Because listening really is, in many ways, as our kids get older, that's the key that opens the door for them to be willing or want to listen to what we have to say. And sometimes people don't know how to describe what it is that they're thinking or feeling. I read a book that was very interesting called Just Listen. And the book was written by a guy who does training for hostage negotiators. So you might want to have his mom speed dial if you've got late teens. But, and he talks about this situation where this man named Frank had gotten to the end of his rope. He'd been fired from his job. His family had moved out from him, and he'd been evicted from his apartment. And he pulls into this parking lot, and he's got a gun, and you know, you can tell what he's about to do himself in. So it's an intense situation. The SWAT team's there, and the local law enforcement is trying to talk with him, and they've been going back and forth for about an hour and a half, and it's just a stalemate. So they bring in the negotiator, and the negotiator guy says to the cop, he says, say to him, man, this must really stink that you've gone through these different things and it's come to this and this is the only way out. That must really stink, right? And the cop kind of looks at him and is like, what? No, he says, say it. So he says it to Frank, and Frank's kind of caught off guard, and finally he gets, yeah. And basically we was going back and forth, and they kept saying to Frank, boy, if I was in your situation, this is kind of what I would be feeling. Is that what you're feeling? And eventually Frank starts to calm down, and he agrees, and he says, yes, that's what I'm feeling. And then he works it through, and he says, so just to be clear, if, you know, are you feeling like you're angry? Are you feeling frustrated? Are you feeling, what is it exactly that you're feeling? And Frank says, fed up. And, you know, God tells us to listen, to ask questions. And from the research that they've done, they've shown us that if we can get somebody to name the feeling that they're feeling at that moment, that somehow in our brains de-escalates things and brings things down. And let's face it, you know, in our family discussions, there are times when the emotional temperature in the room starts ramping up. And just if the first thing, pray, ask God for wisdom, and then begin asking questions. And then call Mark. But and just as parents, you know, listening, so it sounds like you're dealing with this, and we work it down, and then at the end say, you know what, I remember a Bible verse that talks about that issue. Could we look at that together? You know, just being slow to speak. When they share a problem, one of the things that we see happening today and that I've read about is what's called the snowplow parent. You know, a child shares a problem, and then, you know, we as parents, we've been there, we've done that, and we want to rush in, we want to solve the problem for the child so that they don't have to suffer like what we suffered. But in many ways, that's a bad idea. Because I don't know about you, but when I blow snow, I blow it out to the end of my driveway, and then it's on somebody else. You know? And for our kids, when they get to be 18, they've reached the end of your driveway. And at that point in time, they better know how to use a shovel. You know, if we jump in and we try to fix the problem for us, we're really short-circuiting the process that God has designed to develop within them the character and the maturity to handle life's problems. You know, in another part of James, God talks about how he uses trials and adversity to grow us, to get us to depend upon him, to learn to trust him. And God uses that same process within our kids if we let him. If we jump in and try to provide the answer so they don't have to figure it out, we're really robbing them of a chance to grow in their faith, to learn to depend upon God. And honestly, we may be getting in God's way of what he wants to do in their lives. Next part of what James says is slow to become angry. Proverbs 29:11 also says this, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. You know, in those times that I talked about, I was playing the part of the fool because I got worked up inside, I got angry, and then instead of stopping to consider the effect of my words, I was just kind of vomiting out the anger and the crud that was inside of me instead of thinking through what I was saying. So when we get in a situation that begins to get tense, remain self-controlled. Before you speak, ask yourself, I'm learning to ask, and I encourage other people, ask yourself, is what I'm about to say helpful for moving this conversation forward? Is what I'm about to say helpful for either clarifying what the problem is or putting out some potential solutions or bringing us together? Or is what I'm about to say, am I just throwing out my anger, my emotions, and just dumping it on people? You know, and as parents, we really need to guard against reacting. Because parenting is a long game. Kids, it's a messy process at times. Kids are going to make mistakes. They're going to disobey. They're going to be immature. Okay, I've shared some of my messes. I'll share one success story just to make me feel better. But a couple winters ago, I got the call, Dad, I put the car in the ditch. And so I got home that night, and you know, it's middle of winter, it's cold, and yeah, it was in the ditch. It was in a big ditch. So we're sitting there looking at it, and we figured out a way to get it out, and I'm sitting there praying, you know, God, how do I respond to this? And I just felt like God was saying, just be quiet. Just be cool. So I trusted God this time, and we got the car out. We got it up on the road, and I really hadn't said anything. I was just kind of letting there be silence, you know, that nice, awkward silence. And the child turned to me and said, Dad, you know, I'm sorry. I know this isn't what you were hoping to do with your evening, is spend your time getting his car out of the ditch. And I just said, thank you. You know, and I said, I'm also very grateful that you're alive. This is a deep enough ditch, and there's obvious there was probably some speed involved. I said, I'm really glad you're all right, but I said, just think about what happened. And I left it at that, because, I mean, he was a responsible kid, just made a bad decision. You know, staying under control sometimes gives us a lot greater impact than if I would have jumped up and down and yelled over it. You know, and when anger happens often, one thing to know about anger is that it's really a secondary thing. You know, when I first started seeing that I had issues with my anger, I tried to just zip it, you know, but that's like trying to, you know, if you got a bad weed growing in your ground and go out and try to break off the seeds, the plant is still there. When there's anger going on that's consistently there, something else is happening down below. And until we deal with that something else, you know, are we afraid of something else happening? Is there a loss of control? Are we overcommitted? Are we trying to do too many things where everything's got to go just so in order for this to work? And honestly, sometimes, you know, we have to think through and ask God, show me what else is going on, because it's not immediately clear what's going on down inside of us. Okay, let's change gears slightly now. Let's look at how we use our words wisely. Proverbs 18:21 says, life and death are in the power of our tongue. And isn't that so true? I mean, so much of our relationship to our children, is the tone of that, the temperature of that, is set by the words that we speak. Our words can either pull us closer together or drive us apart. Use compliments to build up your kids. You know, it can be as simple as something as simple when you see them little and, you know, hey, little Tommy, last night at supper I saw you give the half of your last cookie to your little brother, And man, I'm just so proud of you. That's exactly what Jesus would ask you to do. We also need to confirm and help them see the areas where God has gifted you, gifted them, the abilities he's given to them. You know, one of the coolest things that my dad did for me when I was growing up was he decided when I was a senior in high school that he was going to put up a steel shop. And to save money, we were going to put it up ourselves. So the trucks come, they deliver the stuff, and we're sitting there one night, and he says, hey, go out and see if you can find the instruction book. So I go out and I find it, and you know, it's a half inch thick. And I come in, I give it to him, and he kind of grins for a minute and he hands it back to me. He says, read that book. He says, you're in charge. I was like, what? And he says, yeah, no, you're gonna, he says, you're good at being able to pitch your stuff and figure out how to put things together. He says, you're going to be the foreman, we're going to be the crew, you're in charge. Now, the good news is the building's still standing. So, but I mean, just for me, man, that was one of the best compliments that my dad could have given me, is just saying, hey, you're competent in this area, God has gifted you here, do this. You know, and sometimes we got to look, honestly, to find those compliments. I remember the process of teaching my kids how to mow the lawn. You know, and the first couple times you're kind of checking to make sure they're not running into anything. And they get done and there's skips everywhere. But, you know, if you really got to be careful and just say, man, I appreciate that you mowed the lawn. We'll work on, you know, and just in the back of your mind think we'll work on quality over the next couple of weeks. But just pick out what they did right. I mean, anybody can tell them what they did wrong. The hard part is to figure out what they did right and encourage them on that. And when we give compliments, the more specific, the better. And don't gush. You know, just a word here and there, maybe not every day, but just be specific, encourage them. Let's look at another passage here, Malachi 4, 5, and 6. And in this verse it says, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction. Now it's interesting, these are the last verses in the Old Testament. And what he's speaking, what they're prophesying, is talking about the coming of John the Baptist and John the Baptist's role of announcing the coming of Christ. And it's really interesting that it gives us this emphasis that one of the key missions, the key effects of John foretelling the coming of Christ is that of bringing families back together, that of turning the hearts of the parents to their children. So, you know, one of the necessary things for us to is just spending time with our kids, unhurried time where we can enjoy them and they can enjoy us. And in this day and age, a lot of times that doesn't happen unless we specifically schedule it and put a, you know, either by limiting how much outside involvement we have, or better yet, putting a specific time on the calendar. This is when we're together. As dads, you know, the needs of our sons and our daughters are a little bit different. Daughters seem to really enjoy that face-to-face interaction, that talk time, the time where you just get apart with her and make her feel special. You know, take her out to eat on a date. Breakfast is a little cheaper. but she needs to know that you cherish her. This is something I wish I would have found when my kids were at home, but I just Googled questions to ask your daughter, And it actually came up with a pretty good list of thought-provoking questions, you know. And if you're like me, that gets a little, you know, hi, how you doing? And then, okay, now what, you know? To have two or three of those questions to pull up and ask your daughter and just get her talking about what's going on in her life. With our sons tend to value more shoulder-to-shoulder time. So what are they into? I was a little bit devious as a dad. I really worked hard when my sons were little to kind of hook them on fishing and hunting, but it was for a good reason. I enjoyed it. It so much helps if you got something that you both enjoy, that you could both look forward to be able to do. You know, with guys too, I mean, and our kids are all so different. I mean, some young guys are into opera, and some are more into Tannerite. You know, it seems like a little bit of element of excitement or danger really gets our guys' attention. So, and the last passage I'd like to look at is in Deuteronomy 6. And then this, I think, is probably one of the hardest areas for us as dads, is teaching our kids spiritually. And this passage says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your heart. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up." You know, guys, the statistics, what you hear is that I heard a survey that about 85% of us coming to church is the only spiritual input that we do with our children. And honestly, guys, our kids need more than that. Because as you know, our culture is no longer impressed with us as Christians. There's a real spiritual headwind against us. And fathers, we need to give our kids more than that. Find a way to teach them. You know, when they're little, anytime you sit down and read them a story, they love it. Just read from the Bible. Find a children's Bible that you can read to them. They love it. And as they grow, you know, do a little bit of research and find a resource that works. Keep experimenting. I mean, even if you try something that doesn't work, try something else. And this can seem so awkward at first. It's kind of intimidating. I don't know. As guys, it seems like, man, we're up for a lot of things. But boy, you set us down in the family circle and you know, one eye roll from our teenage daughter and we're out of there. But keep trying. Keep working at it. Even if you try and it doesn't work, try something else. Because Satan wants to convince us that we can't do this. You know, he wants to tell us we don't know enough, that we don't know how to lead, or that we're too broken and we've blown it too many times. But don't listen to him. Don't cooperate with him. The Bible has many records as you read through of where God came to people and said, "I want you to do this," and the person says, "I can't do that." And honestly, on our own, no, we can't. But God, who is willing to partner with us, has never lost a battle. He's never made a mistake. And he knows everything from beginning to end. I mean, it's almost too easy. But if we'll just step out in faith and take him at his word. And the other thing, man, is we really need to do this. We have an incredible amount of influence on our children, even though we may not see it every day. I was listening to J.D. Greer, and he spoke of a survey that was done recently, and unfortunately, I didn't write down the source, which I, well, I did, and then I lost my notes. But it talked about the influence that a dad has. For families that are just coming to Christ, if a child is the first one in the family that comes to Christ, there's about a 3.5% chance that others in the family will follow. If the mom is the first one, it's about a 17% chance that others will follow. But if the dad is the first one, there's about a 93% chance that other members in the family will follow. So dads, you have that influence whether you're seeking it or not, whether you ask for it or not. It's there and it's yours. Use it. Trust God, step out, and let God use you even in the midst of your brokenness. So let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, just show us how to step out. Give us the courage, and God, lead us. And use these crooked sticks that we are to point in a straight direction, Father. Help us in Jesus' name. Amen.